Oh, good morning. It is it's a Thursday, and you're listening to Cohen Meander. I'm Jason Nemro, and Yasson Ben David Hakohen. I was just listening to. I've been trying to add some more podcasts because I really didn't have enough content to get me through days. The biggest daily podcast I have is Alex Jones, and Alex is a little heavy for me. I like Alex a lot. I think he's a good guy. I think he has. Just because he ranges out so far, he's got usually got a pretty accurate take on what's going to happen soon. And there's only so much talk of World War III and stuff like that I can do. I figure that if I was kind of a guy that lived in Europe in all those years, that they were constantly at kind of play war with each other. Because kings get bored really easy, and the most exciting thing to do is go out and have a little tit for tat war, acquire some land if you can, you know, because that really was the status back in the day. And if you're training up an army, or if you're training to do battle, can I be honest? The whole point of training is to do battle. If you're training all the time, you have to do battle. Otherwise, it's just a silly exercise. And but that also meant that, you know, like my family or my dad's paternal line, which is of course the one that comes the priestly line, I don't think they really moved particularly until the decision was made to come to America. Then there was movement, but by and large, people would stay in the same place, but your country would change on a regular basis, especially where they were. They were in kind of the Austria, Poland, Romania area. And that place was constantly changing hands. Now, you know, constantly is over the course of decades, but still. That's kind of how that would be. And people talk about World War III or about the coming American Civil War. Right now, I'm kind of living in territory that doesn't, that isn't very compatible with the main population of my state. New Mexico is very much an old Spanish colony. And so there are quite a few Spaniards here. You know, when people talk about Mexico and they say, well, there's a lot of Mexicans there, and you go, no. Not really in New Mexico. It says now there's been more coming lately. You know, in my part of the state, many of the people here, many of the mestizo people here are actually Mexicans. Where when you go north and west of here, you start to run into the Spaniards. A lot of the descendants of the original people that came up the Rio Grande River and settled this territory. Most of it happened before Europeans even got to North America. Otherwise, these are really the first Europeans to make it to North America. Did they interbreed with the local Indians? Yes. So they are a distinct group. They have the same last names, and the whole culture is that if they've got a Spanish surname, you know, everybody treats them as Mexicans, even though these are very dispersed groups. New Mexico was really, even though it has the name New Mexico, it wasn't part of Mexico formally. It was its own entity, despite what the name gives you the feeling of. And of course, well, anyway, doesn't really matter. If there turned out to be an American Civil War, I think I'm just probably going to stay put. I've often thought that I needed to go to some place where I might be treated with a little more compatibility, with a little more respect. And it's like, you know, it's just, I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't know of any place that would do that. Almost every place is a little shy of outsiders. If you're not from there, they don't want anything to do with you. You know, if you come there to try to help improve things, they'll likely kowtow to you and take advantage of you and still not treat you like other people. You know, it says, you know, they go, oh, it's so inexpensive to live in Central America. And you go, no, it's inexpensive for Central Americans to live in Central America. It says, when you go down there, all the prices go up by about 50%, whatever they feel like they can get away with. It's kind of an agreement among all the vendors that when gringos show up, you start fleecing them as hard as you can. And so the basic thing that you do is you almost immediately get a housekeeper or a cook or something like that, because they go to the market and they get the local price. And what you end up getting out of it is food and someone to prepare it for you. And you just hope that how do they prepare it meets your requirements. Anyway, so I don't know how that was really going to work for me, at least. Anyway, so if I'm going to stay right where we are, the place where I live has, there's a growing Mexican population, and I use that word specifically. They are by and large from Mexico, and that's where their roots are. That's where their heart tends to be. I am the descendant of American expansionists, people who came over here looking for land, for opportunity, and settled in New Mexico, which was really the last continental U.S. frontier. But it's got a pretty good climate for my wife, who doesn't like humidity. Any place east of here starts getting humid quickly. And, of course, because it's more humid, things grow better there. Things don't grow well here at all. You know, I guess they kind of do, but you've got to put a lot of water on it. Water is something that has price tag on it here. you have to pay for it. And usually it's really not worth paying for. It's actually cheaper to, through modern bringing in technique, it's actually easier to buy produce, even though it has to be trucked in. It's much easier and probably cheaper to buy it than to grow it. Although the price of produce has really been going up because of energy costs. So anyway, there is no indigenous, you know, when you say, well, what did people used to grow here before the Anglo folk came? And you go, well, they didn't. This was mostly just pasturage for buffalo. And it was used as a hunting for various animals that live here. There are deer. There are buffalo, or there were buffalo, a lot more buffalo than anything else probably. And they would come and they would hunt here, and then they would go and they would take it back to their homes. So some of the oldest sites you see around here are camping spots, usually by springs or something. Camping spots of hunters, like Clovis Man, here just north of Portales, was not some village. You know, it was just some people who, you know, a hunter. So you don't find a lot of things. You find a lot of arrowheads, so it was the popular camping spot. That's really what this place was. And you would have the occasional campsites here and there. Now, there was water under the ground, and once you got good at deep well drilling, there was a lot of water to be had. So between the springs, there was a spring by Portales. I think I found not really a spring, but a seat where I was going to buy some land. I didn't do it. And it really became the kind of thing that you would bring in materials. That was why this place didn't really get very good until the railroad came through. There was a few people who came before the railroad. I'm trying to think if my family was among them. No. I think my family actually came kind of coincidental with, finally came in coincidental with the railroad. Once homesteading started here, that was when my mother's family came to this land and settled here because they were, you know, surveying this, and it was basically free land. You would come and you would get your 160 acres. The only problem was 160 acres typically was not sufficient to sustain anything like a family. Because water was really hard to come by and precious, and it took resources to bring it in, you know, to drill the wells down to get it. People could have gardens, but you have to dump a lot of water on it, and if you're having to pay for the water, you didn't do that. You paid for water, brought it in. And this was definitely cattle country. You know, a few people keep goats and sheep, but largely not. cows did better on this. So I'm looking out here. This, I'm on top of the Caprock. I'm looking out, and it's just a whole range of nothing. And to be honest, past putting up fences and running electrical wires everywhere, very little here. These guys have to bring in lots of fertilizer. They have to drill deep wells and do pivot watering. Now before pivots, there were just, I don't know what you used to call the old watering. They weren't called pivots because they didn't go around. They actually went down your rows. And it took a lot of work because you had to keep those things running. You had to move them every now and then, or you had to run them back and then run them forward and backward. And you had to use a lot of flexible piping to keep the water flowing to it. And it went rather slow, so it went okay. These pivots are much easier. Now it doesn't do a fantastic job because a lot of your corners of your fields never got water because a pivot is a circle. You know, it goes around a circle. So people got into the habit of either selling off the corners, or that's where they would build their houses, is on the corners of these situations. They would dig their, they would put in their well, in the middle of their property, or they'd run the water in the middle of their property. Much better to have the well right there. And they would run their water. Anyway, so when it comes to things like World War III, is it going to affect here? Not really. The Air Force Base where I work, isn't really an attack base, so I don't think by and large it's going to be used that way, and so it probably won't be attacked as such. It's more of an intelligence base these days, also special operations, which is mostly doing just kind of thing, not really war fighting particularly, but operations like monitoring the border, taking care of small insurrection type stuff. Did quite a bit of work going toward I think from here it's going to be a lot of border work. And a lot of that's done with drones, things like that. Sometimes they'll go and do something someplace else. Mostly surveillance, I would imagine. And doing very precise strikes on surveilled targets. Anyway, so that's neither here nor there particularly. So there's no real pressing need for me to get away from where I am. I would like to get a little ways from civilization, but to be really honest, I'm far enough away from civilization now. I worry that there's going to be some kind of because Interstate 40 is such a corridor for transportation, and that's really the whole purpose of the interstate highway system, is mostly being able to transport troops and munitions to to where they need to be. We're kind of in the middle of that, so this part of the world will always be kind of pressed. Is it going to go away? No. Is it going to shrink a bit? Yeah. It's still going to shrink a little bit more than it is. You know, at some point, we may not have a hospital. Our school may shrink even more than it has already. But that's everywhere. Everywhere is going to be like that. So, I'm just going to, I think, smile a lot and sit tight right where I am. The electrical prices are a little high. Gas goes pretty well. I'm going to do a little bit of solar, probably for the computers, the televisions, the screens. I think I want to have my cooler on solar, so I'm thinking of different ways to move air efficiently. It might be more efficient than using just straight motors. Although, to be honest, these solar panels do a good job with motors, so it might be good that way. I really need to research DC motors that do really well with solar, you know, with power that just comes in a little, and then you let it charge, and then it kind of pows, it kind of kicks on the motor. You know, if you just put a little bit of power through like a brush mode motor, I think that it actually has a tendency to well. If it sits there with a little bit of power going through it or corrode a lot, those brushes. And so you really want something that behaves differently. But it's of a small size that it can do a good job. In fact, I need to go ahead and look that up here. But that's okay. I can do it when I can get to my destination. It's fine. I've got a whole bunch of solar panels that I got from kind of an insurance sale. They had big problems hail. You know, big hailstones coming down, hitting those solar panels, and just, you know, destroying them. And so I bought a whole bunch that had been somewhat destroyed. I should have taken some kind of thing with me to really pick out good panels. I think most of mine are pretty good. They've been reasonably well protected all these years. So I've had them for about 4 or 5 years. And it's probably high time that I start trying to put them to use. And I just assume put them to use in spot situations. Fans for various places around my house, you know. I'll probably still have ceiling fans that I will use at night, but other fans that will be used during the day to keep the house kind of on the cool side so it doesn't get too bad. A lot of ventilation fans, attic fans, to try and keep that whole situation good. What else? And then kind of the more normal thing where it's like, you know, it goes through a charge controller and charges up some batteries. That, you know, and that just is so that you can have power when you need it. It isn't made for major things. Like, I'm probably not going to have, unless I have a lot of spare solar panels, I probably won't rig them particularly probably won't rig them to actually run a refrigerator or my freezer. Although as time progresses, I might choose to get a chest freezer and get one for freezing and one for not freezing, you know, for being a refrigerator, keep milk and stuff in. Although it might be more useful, you know, no. Getting parts for a different kind is going to be bad, so. Kind of more interested in the transfer of cold and heat, so I might just do big ice, almost ice box things. That would probably be a pretty good addition to stuff. If I could get those out of the house, make it more useful to go out and get them somewhere else, that'd be good. And then, I don't know. I'm thinking of all kinds of different things and how to do it efficiently with solar. The whole point is you really want your solar to run well when it gets hot. So things that require cooling that you can do with the refrigerated unit, great. It's almost kind of tempting to kind of meld a swamp cooler with your refrigerator to keep your refrigerator at a good temperature. You chill stuff and you send it down into that and you put it on top of the refrigerator. You send the air through it, but you have the excess air being blown in. It'll come into your house through your refrigerator. I think that would be pretty cool. I think. Interesting thing to experiment and try with, knowing, you know, and then you can go get another bunch of panels from these places that sell panels for next to nothing. Anyway, so, refrigerating and freezing may be able to be pulled off as long as you use a better system. And if you really want to do it upright, I guess you can, but you'll really want to. Oh, that's the field turn off. Yeah. But you'll really want to, you really want to have a big frozen block of ice, probably. That's probably the easiest way to do it. It's just freeze water. It's made to behave that way. And that way it doesn't get too cold. It doesn't get, you know, beyond the kind of cold that frozen water gets, you know. So that's an interesting idea of how you would want to try and do this stuff. Heating, it pretty much got natural gas. It's cheap. It's already in place. The biggest problem is I have to get kind of a gas fitter to come and do gas lines for me, and that costs a lot. And so my tendency would be to do it some other way. But I've got heating pretty much handled. It's okay. If I can find some ways to kind of supplement it so it's not that I don't have to add more gas lines, but I can add maybe a greenhouse on the south side. More water to catch and hold heat. Excellent thing. And use that water for a variety of things is a wonderful idea for me. I kind of like that one. Put it on our south side and give it a good, give it some good space to get some heat and be able to take that heat in and store it. Warm water. It won't ever be particularly hot, but it could be warm water. And you could use that for various things. What's going on here? I tell you, that's kind of nice. Anyway, regardless, so yeah, you know, I started thinking about what would I do for World War III or what else would you call what's going on? I know if World War III happened and the draft got redone and you got called up in the draft, that the thing that they would tend to put me into would be some kind of stupid computer repair, which is fine, I guess. I don't know. I do that now, and I'm kind of indifferent to it. Somebody has to maintain these systems, so it would be me. And you go, yeah, it would be probably a good thing for older guys to be doing, is doing this kind of work to keep things running. But I would have a nice rig for all of my water distribution. I would have, you know, water coming off the roof into these water holders. One of them I could use to try to stabilize heat and cold on the south side of my house, or to be able to put up kind of a greenhouse over there. I need to get various pumps and pump during the day when the solar can just handle all the pump work to move it from place to place. I might still have some water on top of the roof and try to heat up some water up there to do a bit of solar. You know, water going into the hot water heater, it's always good to have it somewhat preheated so that when the water turns on with the natural gas, even though I don't pay much for natural gas, it will already have been somewhat preheated. That's got some good possibilities. I can do that around the side of where the swamp cooler is, because that's right above where where the hot water heater is. So you wouldn't have just tons of loss in running it all around the place. You'd have it right above it. I might have to shore up that line to bear up a little bit of weight. But by and large, easy, easy, easy. Someday you may have to break down, actually close in my shed better, so we can use it more for storage than we have then. It's quite dirty in there. New Mexico's dirty. And so you have to do better stuff for, you know, like food storage and such. So I may have to break down and improve my storage building a little bit, so it works a little bit better. Regardless, you know, this guy is just like going 70. I think I'm going to let him. No one's going past me. So yeah, am I really worried about what happens? Am I going to go with the whole point that sometimes things change hands and you just have to kind of put up with them? I'm hoping that if such a thing happens, circumstances will get a little more... Oh, this guy's actually pulling off here in the old pumpkin patch. And this guy just grew a ton of pumpkins. It's garbage now. I don't know if he did it so that he could till it back into the soil and try to improve the soil more. I think there's something to be said for using pumpkin as kind of a nitrogen fixer. And you can plow that back into your soil, and then you can grow something far more lucrative there. To be honest, I'm not really into lucrative anymore. I'm a little bit more into, I don't know what I'm into really, but all right, we're nearly to our destination. I need to stop. So this one's going to be about preparing for whatever happens. I don't think political changes will matter. You know, in the Civil War, New Mexico is going to definitely go with blue places if it can, or at least ally itself with blue places. It'll probably still, you know, it's really distant from the two coasts. I don't know if that means a whole lot of people will go out, but you have to understand, a lot of people who are here, who are kind of blue, are ancestrally here. So the chances of them moving are pretty low. And I don't know if New Mexico is really going to change that much. It doesn't seem like it's tendency. So, oops, come on, baby. There we go. So I think when push comes to shove, the war won't pretty really come to here. I don't think. I like my liberty, but I'm not sure I'm going to actually end up, you know, fighting for it particularly. I'm glad when it comes. I take advantage of it. But otherwise, I'm just going to kind of go with however it goes around here. This part of the state's pretty conservative, almost bordering on libertarian. And that's kind of my sensibilities. I'm actually living among a group of people that are kind of into that, kind of that way to begin with. So that's kind of good. So I'm done. This is Cohen Meander. I'm Jason Nemro. See, talk to you later.